The Lower Mississippi, July. The river has reverted to feral since the cataclysm of 2022, a continent-crossing monster unleashed. The days of tugs churning up or down river with a quarter mile of linked barges are gone, along with many of the navigational aids. Barge traffic now looks more like a truck convoy, with various sizes of small craft and tugs pushing a few barges along the river in a long, thin column, led and flanked by small powerboats checking the navigability of the ever-changing river. There is one long stretch flanked by a northwest bend on one end and a southward hook downriver that causes the barge captains to press close to the unfriendly western side. This is the Tunica Sands, a stretch of river between Tunica and Memphis avoided by all the river rats as though it was cursed ground. 10 great weed-choked casino barges on the eastern bank are now landlocked thanks to silt deposits all around their keels. Like a latter-day leper colony, the entire area is surrounded by fencing and watchposts. Only the sick, under Reaper escort, go in. Only the Reapers come out again. The big cat hadn't changed much in the 8 years since Valentine had last seen him. A little less hair, perhaps. A little more waistline, certainly. But he was still the big, half-aquatic athlete of the Yazoo Swamps with a satchel full of apples. Ever Ready had taught Valentine how to lower life sign and move without being noticed over the course of one impossibly hot summer, and the fact that he'd survived to return proved the effectiveness of his tutor's methods. The New Orleans Saints baseball cap was gone, though. Now he wore a black broad-brimmed hat that made him look like a missionary. Strung Reaper teeth rattled at his neck, and layers of bullet-stopping Reaper robe hung off his body in an oversized tunic that no sane man dared call dress. Finding him had been surprisingly easy. While casting about for a way to get across the Mississippi, they came upon a summer-out Wolf Patrol in charge of monitoring river traffic. The Wolf Patrol relied on Everready for information about the opposite bank in the Yazoo Delta between Vicksburg and Memphis, and the trio crossed the river in a birch-bark canoe with a guide who rested and camped with them at the rendezvous until the legendary cat appeared to trade supplies for data. Everready had no young wolves to train this year, further evidence of the still-echoing disruption of Solon's occupation and the continuing absence of the Life Weavers.
Good to have you back, David. Even an old swamp hound gets lonely now and then.
So he was willing, after concluding his exchange with their wolf guide, to take Valentine and company into Memphis. They looked like four spirits in their first camp on the trip north around their Yazoo Swamp campfire, the humans under individual shrouds of mosquito netting, while Anka followed the grog manner by pasting his sensitive face and ears under a layer of mud. Valentine thought Duvalier looked like a silent film starlet, with face glowing in the firelight behind the layer of netting.
Only 4 ways into that town, barring being brought in handcuffs and bike guards. There's the river. They check everybody at the river, and they're damn good at spotting fake documents. And most visitors are kept to the riverfront anyway. Then there's the wall. There are gaps at the rock wall, of course, but the smugglers have gone to a lot of trouble to open them and watch them, and they won't let you through for free. Then there are the road gates, but it's the same problem, another document check. Most people who come to trade do it at Little City around Memphis. Then the middlemen the Memphis authorities know and trust go through the gates with their goods.
That's 3 ways in.
Yes, sir, Mr. Grog, that's only 3 ways. The fourth is a bit tricky. Up along the Tunica Run. Tunica's a dumping ground for those that got the rabies bug. Memphis buys them cheap off their fellow Currians and dumps them in Tunica, so there's always a feed on for their reapers. Every now and then they release a batch on the west side of the river to give the free territory folks a little trouble, too. If you're careful, really careful, you can move north through the rabies colony. It's really just a big wall there and one gate. They watch the gate and patrol the wall, but not too heavily. Rabies types aren't into engineering ways over or under the wall. Too busy chasing their own tails.
So what's in Memphis that's worth all that security?
The banks.
Banks? There aren't banks anymore.
Yes, there are. Only kind of banks that matter to the Currians. Big marshalling yards for the transshipment of humans.
Tell her why.
Logistics. Memphis is only a day's rail from every big city on the eastern seaboard, plus parts of the Midwest and Texas. The parts your boys haven't took yet, that is. It's why old FedEx was headquartered there, too. Some courier in Kansas buys tractors from Michigan. He sends authorization to the bank in Memphis to ship up 300 folk or whatever the price was. They're on the next train to Detroit. Those yards are a sight to see. Let me ask you the same question. What's so important in Memphis that you're willing to risk going in?
We're looking for someone.
Unless he's got a job in one of the camps.
She.
Unless she got a job in one of the camps. Wait, is she a looker?
She's attractive enough, but there's more to it.
What do you mean?
Valentine tried to explain the mule list to Everready as concisely as possible.
There's this big old boy named Moyo who runs all the girls inside the wall. Always has his men checking inbound shipments for beauty. He's got a regular harem. Half the large-scale pimps south of the Ohio buy from him. He employs bounty hunters to comb the hills east of here to bring in folks to swap out when one of his men spots a pretty girl. Couriers don't really care. What's the difference between $1 coin and another? Moyo does a lot of high-priority transshipping. He'd be the first place I'd look for women on this mule list of yours, if it really is all women.
After that, he and Valentine spent a few minutes looking at maps. Everready chuckled that he hardly used the maps anymore. He knew the ground between Memphis and Vicksburg so well, and planning the hike north.
We should jog east a bit at the Coldwater. I got a store of captured gear you three can draw from.
How's Trudy?
Valentine jerked a netting-shrouded chin at Everready's ancient carbine. The well-oiled stock glowed in the firelight.
Still saving my life.
And the Reaper Teeth collection?
71 and counting.
All from fair fights, right?
Valentine, how you think I got this old? Only time I ever get into a scrap with the Reapers when they're so disadvantaged, it's hardly a fight at all.
Valentine woke to the smell of chicory coffee. Everready and Duvalier were the only ones up. Anka lay in a heap, wrapped around his gun like a snake that had swallowed a bullock before retiring to a too small tree. He listened to the conversation as he shifted around, feeling for creepy crawlies. He missed his old hammock.
I didn't know cats got as old as you. I thought we were all done by 30.
For a start, I stay in territory I know better than they do. I don't make a lot of trouble. I'd rather let my eyes and ears do the work.
Don't the Life Weavers ever have you?
I think they've forgotten about old Everready. But that's fine with me. Like to fight with my own set of priorities. I suppose that's how I ended up in this swamp.
Seems lonely. Do you go into Memphis often?
No, they know my face there. Not that I wouldn't mind visiting the pros down at the pyramid. Your pretty face makes me feel 20 years younger.
Wish I could help. But...
You're lucky. He's a good man. But be careful working with someone you got that kind of feeling for. The moment will come. Maybe you'll just have a split second to move. And you'll move wrong because of your feelings. You'll both wind up dead. Don't look like that. Just one old hound's opinion. If I knew what I was talking about, I'd have some hardware on my collar and be giving orders, right?
Let's see about breakfast.
I'll check the crawfish traps. Better use the big pot. That grog can eat.
Valentine waited to open his eyes until he felt the tip of Duvalier's boot.
You can wake up Anka. When he stretches in the morning, his gas drops the birds.
Everready's cache showed his usual craftiness. He kept medical supplies, preserved food, and weapons in several spots between the Yazoo and the Mississippi. The problem was keeping the gear away from scavengers. Humans could use tools, and animals could smell food through almost any obstacle. In the Coldwater Creek cache, he had solved the problem by burying his supplies behind a house and then placing a wheelless, stripped pickup body over it. Anka stood watch in a high pine while they excavated the cache.
The engine block's still in this, so she's a heavy SOB.
Everready retrieved a wire cord rope from the house's chimney. The rope he fixed to the trailer hitch. Then he tied his Reaper rope top around the base of a tree, looped the rope around it, and fixed it. He handed the line to Duvalier.
Here you go, young lady.
She hardly had to lean as she applied a transverse pull to the center of the rope. The truck pivoted a few feet, exposing some of the dirt and a few hardy creepers beneath the pickup bed. Everready tightened it again, and she slid the pickup body another meter toward the tree.
Why the material around the tree?
Ever-Ready checked under the dashboard on the passenger side and then pulled out a folding shovel with a gloved hand.
So the bark doesn't strip. You'd be surprised how clever some scavengers are.
The heavy-duty garbage cans within had further items wrapped up inside them. A few guns, thick with protective grease, boxes of ammunition, a large box of red pepper, ideal for throwing off tracking dogs, and a pair of shin-top-high camouflage-patterned boots.
You and I have about the same size foot, I think.
Valentine grabbed up the snake-proof boots like a miner spotting a golden nugget.
There are some good socks rolled up in that coffee tin. An extra pair should make up the difference.
Valentine smiled when he looked in the tin. It also contained a half-dozen old Lifetime batteries with a logo of a lightning bolt-like cat jumping through a red circle. Ever-Ready liked to leave the 12-volt calling cards in the mouths of his kills. He brought up a cardboard box full of a dozen familiar blue tins.
Spam?
No, this was part of a larger shipment going to the Resistance farther east. I took a small expediter fee for getting the pony train there. There's plastic explosive inside the cans. You just got to pop the lid. There's even a layer of pork at the top.
Ever-Ready passed up another bag.
Three kinds of detonators. One looks like a wind-up alarm clock. One's in this watch, but you have to hook it to the batteries in the flashlight. And the others are straight fuses made to look like shoelaces, while the detonators are made to look like 9-volt batteries. Your armorers are clever.
Ever-Ready unrolled a chamois and handed a 9mm Beretta up to Duvalier.
This is a nice little gun, young lady.
Duvalier pointed at a cluster of long guns.
I'll take that Mossberg 12-gauge. Folding stock. Dreamy.
Don't you think you'll stand out a bit in Memphis?
Not after I rope it inside my coat.
Your duster's gonna look strange in this heat.
Not if I'm mostly naked under it.
Hope you're not looking for trouble in Memphis. Hard to get into? It's harder to get out of. Valentine, since you're going to be posing as a real looking to add a few new faces to his line, you'll want something with a little flash. I took this off a wandering guitar man in a swap meet card game.
Ever-Ready picked up a sizable clear plastic food storage container and broke the seal. A long, silver-barreled automatic pistol rested inside with a shoulder holster and spare magazines. The gun was nickel-plated and would reflect light from miles away. No wonder Ever-Ready stuck it in a hole.
You don't mind 22, do you?
For this kind of job, I'd prefer it. It's quiet.
Only took you 4 years and some to add that word to your vocabulary.
And what else?
It's light, so you can carry a lot. And it's a nice varmint round for when you get hungry.
Exacto. Now, let's get you a long arm. Where did I put that son of a bitch?
Ever-Ready rooted through the guns and found a zipped-up case.
Ha, here we are.
He extracted a gleaming bullpup battle rifle.
This here is real U.S. Army issue. Took this off some half-assed commandos out of Jackson 8 years back. Called a Texas U-gun. U for universal. There's 4 interchangeable barrels and actions so she can shoot 9mm, 5.56, 7.62 with a sniper barrel, or you can open her up and feed her shotgun shells. Used to have a silencer, but I rigged it to a rifle I lost. Sorry. Nice little 4-power scope on top. Wish I could give you the grenade launcher for it.
Valentine checked the customizable sling.
This is great, but you keep Trudy?
A man doesn't give up on the girl he loves for a hotter model, even if she's sporting polycarbon rifling. Good gear means flash in the KZ. Don't have the full manual, but there's a card in the case that you should be able to figure it out.
Speaking of flashing, he could use a change of clothing.
Clothes will be a little harder, but I think I've got an old officer's trench coat in here. Very nice waterproofing and only one small stain-free hole.
They rested atop a stripped Kenworth parked outside Tunica, within heavy-duty fencing and mounds of rubble blocking the roads south of the city, out of the line of sight of the nearest sentry tower, spaced miles apart on this, the less critical south side of Tunica.
You ready for this, Valentine? All your shots up to date?
So, we just have to move slowly?
Not so much slow as smooth. No sudden moves. I'm not saying a cough will set them off. Just that it could.
Anka, you'll be okay here for a few days?
There is food and water. I will stay in the cab of this fine vehicle at night and under those trees in the day. Are they less active at night?
Depends. If a few start prowling around, sometimes others join them. Then you get a mob mentality. They go off easier in groups.
Duvalier climbed up and hung off one of the rearview mirror posts and looked north into town. The mirrors themselves were gone.
I see one. By the traffic light that's touching the road.
Valentine saw it too. A distant figure staggered back and forth across the street, leaning forward as though trying to tie his shoes as he walked.
Poor souls.
Lots more, closer to the old casinos. That's where the missions organize themselves. That one's probably lost and hungry. Okay, kiddies, got your iodine?
Valentine and Duvalier touched their breast pockets and nodded. Valentine had a big bottle, half full, courtesy of Everready's stockpile, and Duvalier had a stoppered hip flask holding the other half.
You get bit. First thing you do is get clear and iodine it good. Even if you had your shot, the damn thing mutates sometimes, and who knows what strain is in there. Plus, it'll save you an infection. Lots of these have hepatitis along with their other problems.
They started down the old road.
Don't shoot unless it's life or death. It'll just get them screaming, and between the shots and the screams, you'll have a hurting of psychos on you before you know it.
Everready set an even pace, the old cat rocking a little back and forth like a ship rolling on the ocean. Valentine walked behind, U-gun across his chest in its hands-free sling. Behind him, he heard the steady footsteps of Duvalier, pacing her feet to Everready's rhythm. Valentine had had only one brief brush with rabies sufferers on the Louisiana border. Southern Command generally shot those who succumbed to the disease once their minds went and they didn't understand what was happening anymore. He'd never seen the after effects before. Seen? Smelled, more like. Tunica had once been a pretty town, Valentine suspected, fragrant of the magnolias and dogwoods beloved by the residents. Now, it smelled like a pig farm. Everready paused at the edge of what had been a park running through the center of town. The three of them stood opposite an old bronze statue of three weary-looking soldiers, the two on the ends supporting a wounded comrade in the center. Everready used the rifle of the one on the left to climb atop the bronze shoulders.
The kudzu's been cut back from here.
The growth choked most of the rest of the park.
Probably the mission people.
Everready covered his eyes as he looked around. Valentine heard cats spitting at each other somewhere in the park.
See those basins? Food and water. And there they are, over by the pharmacy.
Valentine saw two heads bobbing among the growth. Both men, with stringy-looking beards. They moved like sleepwalkers, the second following the first.
Careful now. If anyone hears an engine, let me know. My ears aren't what they used to be. Memphis dumps off fresh cases in the center of town sometimes.
They crossed over to one of the main streets. Valentine saw that what he had thought were only two individuals were six, hollow-eyed, tight-cheeked, and knob-kneed. Some shorter women and even a child followed the first two. Everready walked slowly and smoothly, like a man treading across a pool. Piles of feces lay scattered in the streets and alleys, drying in the summer sun. Valentine saw rats in the alleys, sniffing at the odious piles. Cats filled every shady windowsill and step, watching the rats. A pair of kittens watched them from beneath a wheeled dumpster. Valentine put his finger on the U-gun's trigger guard as the slow-moving train of people, or what had once been people, approached. The two files passed each other, the rabies victims' faces spasming in a parody of vocalization, black-toothed mouths opening and shutting, but no sound in their throats but dry wheezes. They looked sunburned and leathery. A few wore stained gray cotton smocks with URM stenciled on the chests and backs. The little girl seemed a bit more animated than the rest. She pointed and waved. Everready ignored her as the group passed by.
Erm.
United Relief Missions. Old school Christians. Down at the riverfront, Memphis lets them operate sort of as independents because they keep these folks alive. Or what passes for it.
Looks like they feed themselves, too.
Duvalier pointed at the corpse of a cat with her walking stick. The cat's midsection had been torn out.
Wish it would rain. The town's a little better after good rain.
They crossed a street, and Valentine saw a heap of bodies, mostly nude, on the steps of what looked like a Neo-Georgian city hall. One kicked, and another rolled over.
Like hogs in a wallow. Cement gets cool at night.
They passed through streets of homes, perhaps one house in three burned to the ground, and the others crawling with cats and inhabited by crows. Valentine saw a larger flock gather and disperse around the crotch of a tree, and found the scavengers feeding on a corpse hanging in a backyard tree like a body draped over a saddle.
That's Reaper work. Last night, by the look of it.
Uh-huh. Pickens are slim in Memphis. They come down here to feed. Memphis buys rabies cases cheap from all across the country and dumps them here. Sort of a walking aura reserve. I'm told they stay alive for years. Until an infection gets them.
I didn't know they still used it except to cause us trouble.
I've heard of them dosing each other's populations when they feud. Or to put down revolts. See, nobody in the KZ gets inoculations except for Quislings.
How much farther? The smell is getting to me. I'm getting sick. Seriously, Val.
Everetti pulled a little tin from his belt and set it on a stone and bar wall in front of one of the houses. He dabbed something from a green bottle on his finger and wiped it under her nose.
Just careful. Breathe through your mouth.
Another pair of rail-thin shamblers wandered near the corpse in the tree. Valentine could have counted their ribs.
I don't like how that one is looking around.
Smells blood. Blood smell sets them off. Best not to move, just stand here. Like those statues at the memorial.
Not taking his eyes from them, Everetti mechanically repocketed his first aid tin. Two crows held a tug of war over a piece of viscera.
Oh, God!
Valentine clutched Duvalier's hand and pulled her to her feet. Her walking stick fell to the ground, and Everetti grabbed it, unslinging Trudy and running with the carbine in one hand and the stick in the other.
Follow me! Don't shoot, you'll just draw more!
Duvalier came off her feet again, wet-mouthed, unable to control her stomach. Valentine released his weapon and picked her up in a fireman's carry. He followed Everetti up a short slope to an intersection.
Let me down! I'm okay!
Valentine went to one knee. He looked back and saw a dozen or so figures running in a more or less arrow-shaped formation. At this distance, their bare feet were so dirty that most looked as though they were wearing black shoes and socks. Kudzu-covered, tree-filled service stations and fast food restaurants lined the road leading toward the casinos, according to an ancient brown sign. Everetti almost leaped across the highway toward a small donut shop. A shriek from the direction of the Mississippi let them know that trouble would soon be running in from a second direction.
Why not the bank?
A little way up the road, a stout-looking brick structure promised safety for money or those fleeing psychotics from behind a wall of scrub pine.
Too big! Can't stop them from getting in!
Valentine heard footsteps just behind. So sick, but able to run so fast. He dropped behind Duvalier and turned, holding the U-gun by barrel and grip. A swift-running young screamer got the butt in his face as he reached for Valentine. He went down, rolling. Valentine shifted his grip and employed the gun in a credible backhand. The screamer didn't get up again. There was no glass in the door or the windows. Everetti vaulted over the counter and entered the cooking line. The display cabinet held nothing but empty trays and an oversized wasp nest. Valentine ran around a permanently parked car and entered the formerly white donut shop. Duvalier had tears in her eyes as she covered the front of the store with her pump action.
Here! Help me with this!
They fled into the cooking line, and Everetti and Valentine moved a fryer to block the path to the narrow kitchen. The lighting seemed wrong. Valentine looked up and saw a hole in the roof. Weather or animal activity had enlarged it to the size of a picture window. Everetti emptied the damp mess resting within a plastic garbage can and wedged it above the fryer as Valentine heard screams from within the donut shop. He pointed to the hole in the roof.
Nice scouting.
Hope they don't climb up there.
Duvalier shifted her shotgun muzzle from the barricade to the roof hole. Everetti put his back to the fryer.
Planning nothing. Never been in here to scavenge. I'd be shocked if there wasn't a hole in the roof for most of these places. Valentine, help me hold this. No, the plastic can, they're trying to crawl over. Girl, check the back, there might be a door.
Duvalier hurried to the other end of the kitchen and disappeared around a corner.
Oh, shit.
Duvalier flew back into the kitchen, her coat billowing and bringing the smell of cordite as she turned and braced herself against a tall refrigerator.
There's a door, or there isn't. That's the problem.
How many?
How many are there?
Thousands!
Sounds about right.
They came, more like a single organism comprised of screaming heads and waving arms than a series of individuals, filling the kitchen with noise. Valentine brought his U-gun to bear, feeling the pounding on the other side of the fryer against his back.
The roof! Go, Allie!
I can jump better than either of you. I'll cover you.
Moore appeared, and Valentine didn't wait to argue. He stood on a prep table and tossed his weapon up through the hole, hoping he didn't overthrow and landed in the parking lot. He grabbed an electrical conduit pipe and pulled himself up, got his foot into a light fixture, and climbed. The roof was thick with growth, and disturbed butterflies hurried into the sky. Everready passed up his gun to Valentine, and Valentine heard Duvalier's Mossberg.
Forget the packs!
Everready made it to the roof with less difficulty than Valentine. Duvalier crouched to spring up through the hole in a single leap, and they were on her. She spun like a dynamo, slamming one against the friar, even now moving from the pressure at the other side. Another sank its teeth into her shoulder, and yet another grabbed her.
Goddamn!
Though mad, though they felt no pain, her attackers weren't reapers. She pushed one off, kicked another, punched a third, pale limbs and coat a whirling blur of motion. Everready shot a fourth with his carbine. Valentine dropped back through the hole.
No!
Valentine picked up her sword cane and used it as a club, swinging at the heads and arms coming around the friar.
Jump!
Everready shot another one down. Valentine struck a ravey on the floor as it clawed at Duvalier's ankle. His kick broke its jaw. Duvalier crouched and jumped and went up through the hole like a missile. Valentine drew the blade from Duvalier's sword stick. Using the wooden tube in his other hand, he battered his way back toward the office. He felt hands clutch at his canvas boots and broke the grip. If they were snake-proof, they'd probably be rabies-resistant.
Val, where are you going?
Let me in that bike, girl.
Diversion!
Valentine rushed into the office. The back wall had bloody spatters and buckshot holes. A staggered Ravy, holding himself up on the desk, received Valentine's boot to his chest, throwing him back onto one coming through the door. Valentine pinned the fresher one like a bug on a piece of styrofoam with the sword point and vaulted through the door, running. Valentine ran through the parking lot, banging a dumpster with the wooden half of Duvalier's sword cane.
Ollie, oxen free! Come out, wherever you are! London Bridge is falling down!
He hurried around into the next parking lot, banging on empty car hoods. Ravy's turned and began to run toward him.
Meet me by the casinos tonight!
Valentine could see the pair on the roof. He saw Everready applying a dressing and the iodine bottle to Duvalier's shoulder.
Come out, wherever you are! Hey, diddle, the freak and the fiddle!
The donut shop began to empty, and other Ravies hurried up from the direction of the riverfront.
Ring around the rosy!
The last few around the donut shop turned toward him.
Warriors, come out to play!
Valentine didn't know what childhood game the last one signified, but an old wolf in Foxtrot Company used to employ the taunt on hidden grogs, clinking a pair of whiskey bottles together. He ran, and the Ravies followed. Ten minutes later, and a mile away, Valentine's bad leg ached, but he had to ignore it. Ignore everything but the staggered line of Ravies running behind him. His third right through the suburban streets in a row. The pursuers were screaming less, growing weaker, which was just as well. Valentine didn't know how long he could hold out. Two more blocks. One more. He summoned the energy for one final sprint to the last turn, running with the sword cane like a baton in a relay race. His speed came at the cost of a deep, deep burn in his legs and lungs. And there they were, a few stumbling Ravies in a line, following the ones ahead of them. The very end of the long file of pursuers formed into a wagon train-like circle around six square blocks of Tunica suburbs. Valentine marked the crash scene he'd seen the first time he ran down this street, impossibly compact cars piled into each other in a rear-end collision, looking like the skeletons of two mating turtles. He staggered behind the cars and sank to his knees, desperately trying to control his panting. He peered between the cars, looking for his pursuers. They followed his path onto the tree-limb-littered street, caught sight of their fellows, and ran to catch up to them. Valentine was too tired to smile. He crept through the underbrush of a lawn, counted 20 of the pack chasing their own tails. Already some were giving up, dropping to their knees and scratching at the accumulated leaves and pine needles in frustration. Then he noticed the bite. Or was it a cut? Must have happened in the donut shop. None of them had been close to him since. But something had made his elbow bleed. He applied his iodine and silently prayed. Under stress, some men's mouths spewed obscenity, others Sunday morning verse. In this case, the latter felt more appropriate as the sting of the iodine took hold. The cut had some angry red swelling around it by the time night fell, and Valentine walked, slowly and gently, down to the riverfront. Two of the defunct casinos had electric light. Several had gigantic red crosses painted on their barge-like hulls, the universal symbol of help to whoever asks. Fire-gutted hotels lined the riverfront road. Valentine could picture the brilliant lighting above and around the multi-story parking lots, the banners along the streets, the florid wealth of a gambling haven opening at the side of the Mississippi, beckoning like a Venus flytrap. He kept out of the masses of somnambulists wandering under the lights, scooping handfuls of meal out of great troughs lining the streets. Naturally, more food meant more piles of feces, and more rats eating the feces, and cats eating the rats. He found an empty trough and passed a wet finger through it. It smelled and felt like ground corn, hog feed-grade corn at that. Some rice and millet, too. Valentine would rather eat the ants disposing of the leftovers. It came from the second floor of one of the hotels. He saw Duvalier's face in a window. He floated into the shell of the fire-gutted building, a concrete skeleton. She met him at the staircase with a hug, and they looked at each other's iodine-smeared wounds.
Let's hope the vaccinations weren't just water.
Rumor had it that rabies vaccine commanded a fantastic price in the Kurian zone, and Southern Command had its share of the unscrupulous. They crept upstairs. Cats, of the feline variety, scattered in either direction at their approach. Duvalier and Everready had his pack and gun. Everready extended a piece of greasy waxed paper.
Chicken and a biscuit. From the missions.
What's next?
A password to my contact in the missions. He's going to get in touch with a training man in Memphis. One of my sets of eyes in the city. Cotswold. Vic Cotswold. He'll take you in. Not the nicest man in the world, but reliable. He thinks I'm working for the Kurians down south, keeping tabs on things in Memphis. He knows me by the handle Octopus. Can you remember that? Octopus.
Great. What's my cover?
I took care of that, Val. You're Stu Jacksonville, a new pimp on the Gulf Coast. We know the area from our time as husband and wife, so there'll only be a minimal amount of bullshitting.
You sure you want to play a whore?
Not whore. Bodyguard. Comrade in arms.
Gay caballero?
Lesbian, if you want to get technical.
Memphis. The dwindling number of old-time residents of this good-time city divide Memphis history into pre-quake and post-quake. The destruction, the starvation, the Kurian arrival, the appearance of grogs, all are linguistically bound together and organized by that single cataclysmic event. When the New Madrid Fault went, most of the city went with it. One of the few substantial buildings to survive the quake was the St. Jude Children's Hospital, whose grave granite now houses many of the city's Kurian rulers behind concentric circles of barracks and fencing. The rubble left behind was pushed into piles. Eventually, those piles were redistributed about the city, forming a 14-mile great wall of junk in a blister based at the river that eventually had dirt piled on top of it to turn it into a true barrier. Now a precarious jeep trail circumnavigates the city atop the wall, except for three gaps to the north, east, and south. The south gap is a subcarbuncle of its own, a fenced-in stretch of land between Memphis and Tunica full of livestock pens and grain silos, barge docks and coal piles. A supplemental reserve of food and fuel for the city in case events of war or nature cut it off from the rest of the Kurian order. Inside the wall, around the heart of the city, are the great bank camps, a temporary concentration of identical wire-divided cantonments that stretched in some cases for miles. Once a tent city for those left homeless after the quake, the tents have given way to 50-foot barracks, now wooden-sided, with windows and cooking stoves. Rail lines, sidings, and spurs stretch into the camp like the arteries, veins, and capillaries feeding the liver. The residents go out of their way not to think about those in the camps. Memphis still has some of its pre-2022 culture along Beale Street and in the Commons, the stretch of city bordering the waterfront. The Commons are dominated by the ravaged and only partially glassed superstructure of the Pyramid. This mighty sports arena and convention center has canvas stretched over the missing panes to admit air without the heat of the sun, giving it the appearance of an impossibly huge sailing ship squatting at the edge of the Mississippi, the trees of Mud Island separating its inlet from the main river. The area around the pyramid rivals Chicago's famous zoo as a center of dubious entertainments, though it is a good deal more exclusive, limiting its clientele to the river rats, the men who work the barges and patrol craft of the great rivers of Middle North America, and those brave enough to go slumming. The pyramid itself sees a higher order of customer with appetites just as base. As a den where flesh is exchanged for goods or services, temporarily or permanently, the pyramid has no rival on the continent. While the city has any number of competing factions, captains of war and industry, mouthpieces both civil and Curian, the commons and the pyramid look to only one man for leadership. The great auctioneer Moyo has bought and sold more slaves in his 40 years than many of the tyrants of old, always to an advantage. If anyone has gotten the better of him and lived to tell of it, even the old-timers of Memphis cannot say. Cotswold was a heavy-set man and puffed constantly like an idling steam engine. He took up a substantial portion of the back cabin of his limo, a yellow-painted old Hummer. They'd met at a roadside diner built out of a pair of old trailers fixed together and put up on concrete blocks. Duvalier looked a little wan and not at all herself. Valentine hoped it was just the pain of her wound and not the onset of rabies. He'd know if she started trembling. That was usually the first sign. It might have been better to leave her with Everready in his casino barge hideout, but she'd insisted on accompanying him into Memphis. Valentine was dressed all in black. His costume was, in fact, a cut-down version of a priest's habit. It was the only well-made matching clothing Everready could easily find at the missions. Valentine had dyed the snake boots to match on his own, and after cutting off the sleeves, added a red neckcloth and a plastic carnation, scavenged from a discarded kitchen on one of the old gambling barges. He wore the gleaming pistol openly in its leather shoulder holster. The U-gun was zipped back up with the rest of their dunnage.
You wanna do what?
Learn about this fellow's setup. Everyone's heard of Moyo. Why not do what he did, only somewhere else?
Of course everyone's heard of Moyo. Nobody moves deposits in or out of this town without him. The reason Moyo's still Moyo is he doesn't let anyone get close to him who hasn't come up through his organization. He doesn't just hire golfies up to get a chance at the inventory.
Valentine had already learned two pieces of Memphis slang. Deposits were the individuals in the bank camps waiting for transshipment to their probable doom. Inventory was attractive women, and a few men and kids, he imagined, meant for the fleshpots, private and public.
Octopus is a good guy. Pays well for the little scraps of information that pass my way. What are you offering?
Valentine reached under his shirt and pulled up a simple lanyard that hung around his neck. A shiny ring turned at the end of the line. Everready had taken it off a dead general.
Brass ring. Is it legit?
It's mine. You get me in to see Moyo, talk me up, and I'll give it to you. I'm sure you have contacts who can verify its authenticity. If it doesn't check out, you can blow the whistle on me.
A coast ring's no good here.
But it is good on the coast. Ever think of your retirement? There are worse places than a beach in Florida.
A ring? You better not be doing a bait and switch.
A real ring and a friend named Jacksonville. The higher-ups are putting me in charge of Port Recreation. Gotta keep the plebes happy.
When's the end of the rainbow, Jacksonville?
I'm rebuilding the hotel down there. Furnishings are on their way. I just want to see about some inventory.
I'm your man. Just be warned. Stay on the up and up with Moyo. He's a razor, he is.
As they drove through the city, Valentine got a feel for the people of Memphis. For the most part, they were drab, tired-looking, clad in denim or corduroys. Hats seemed to be the main differentiator between the classes of the city. The workers wore baseball-style hats, turbans, or various styles of tied kerchiefs. Those who gave the orders wore brimmed hats. A broad-brimmed variety called a planter seemed to be the most popular. Cotswold's Hummer wove through horse carts and mopeds on the way downtown. They took a turn riverward to avoid the jagged outline of the old children's hospital. It had sprouted tulip-shaped towers since the advent of the Kurian Order. A communications tower next to the hospital supported ball-like structures like spider egg sacs, planted irregularly along the sides, a strange fusion of steel and what looked like concrete. But concrete globes of that size couldn't be supported by the tower. Cotswold stared studiously out the opposite window, reading billboards for birth enhancement medications. Something called Wondera promised twins or triplets with every conception. Another read, "Our goal, tranquility and justice for all." Yet another said, "Why settle for vitamins? Get Vitamax, guaranteed satisfaction, his and hers." Once in the summit of the city, the ground rose at the edge of the river before falling away sharply into the Mississippi, Valentine saw men and women dressed with a little more flash. Some of the women even wore heels. Many of the men sported suits that would cause heads to turn and mouths to gape in the Ozarks, broad-shouldered, pinstriped suit coats with matching trousers and patent leather shoes in a variety of colors.
It's a party town.
The car turned north onto a well-paved road and shot down an avenue of impressive new homes, looking out over the breeze-etched river. The car slowed and turned onto a broader highway that went down the steep hill to the river. Valentine looked up at the riverfront homes. All had balconies. Some had two or more. In the distance, to the north, seemingly sitting out on the river, he saw the blue and white checkerboard of the Memphis Pyramid. They slowed below a brownstone monstrosity, pregnant with a glass-roofed patio thick with potted plants.
That's my house. Should say the top floor is mine. I rent out the bottom floor to a colonel and his family. Helps to have friends in the city guard.
I admire the neighborhood.
But I'm hardly ever there. I usually sleep at the office. Hard to make good when you don't have your own bank, but I couldn't manage it. Faces get to me.
Valentine marked Cotswold as one of the Kurian's own survivors who made himself as comfortable as possible without hindering the regime. Valentine wondered, if born in a different time and place, would he shuffle loads of rice and beans in and out of his warehouses, trade in a few luxuries on the side, look the other way to avoid the faces? Docks with tethered small craft filled the riverbank. Valentine saw the soldiers of the city guard everywhere, the russet-colored cotton uniforms and canvas-covered sun helmets going everywhere in pairs. Pairs searching boats, pairs driving in small vehicles Valentine had heard called golf carts, pairs walking along the raised wooden promenades. They got out of the way for the Hummer. They passed into an amusement park. Valentine marked a merry-go-round in operation and a Ferris wheel, giving a good view of the area. Many of the other rides were motionless.
South end of the riverfront is strictly family fun. You should see it on Jubilation Day or Peace Week. People camp down all over the hillside. Great time. Except for the year 43 shelling. Vicious bastards across the river dropped artillery shells all over the place on the last night of Peace Week. Killed hundreds. Hasn't felt the same since.
That was not...
Horrible. Macon Radio carried the story.
Valentine had heard some wolves talking about it after the Kurian propaganda broadcasts. Evidently, they'd hired mercenaries to do it, then killed the three gun crews. A patrol from Bravo Company found the bodies and shell casings. The pyramid grew larger as they approached. Valentine had underestimated its size at first glance. It, too, had a superstructure capping it, a tall, thin tower with a mushroom-like top. Valentine had never seen anything that more perfectly summed up what Molly Carrasca called Vampire Earth. A ruin from the old world, a pyramid of power, with a Kurian at the very top, looking down on the foreshortened, ant-like inhabitants of his domain.
That's some setup Moyo's got.
It's an old convention center. Kind of a city to itself. Every riverman on the Big Three has his own story about his visits there. The Chicago or Vegas or New York girls got nothing on Moyo's. He takes his pick from the deposits across half a continent.
I'm gonna make Jacksonville compete.
Moyo was young once, too.
What do you do for him?
Run a little booze and high-grade beef.
Pay you with parties?
No, I don't go in for that. Not that I'm disapproving of your line of work, Stu. He's got his own clothing lines. When his girls aren't working, they're sewing. Some of the fashions you saw downtown, they come from his Graceland label. I sell them to shops as far away as Des Moines and Chattanooga.
Duvalier had fallen asleep in the back of the Hummer. Her eyes opened again when it came to a stop. Cotswold had brought them to the north edge of the commercial docks. A fresh concrete pier and wharves, built out of what looked like rubble, sat in the shadow of what must have once been a great bridge across the Mississippi. A low, tree-filled peninsula hugged the Memphis side. A rail line ran up into the city from its main tracks, running perpendicular to the old east-west interstate. Valentine saw platform cars being loaded with bags and barrels from the river craft.
That's the river shuttle. My warehouses are at the other end of it.
A narrow pedestrian bridge jumped a few hundred feet of rail line and jumbled rubble separating the pyramid from the rest of Memphis. Houseboats, like suckling baby pigs, lined up along the riverside of the pyramid in the channel between the tree-filled island and the pyramid's plaza.
You get a lot of boat traffic in Jacksonville?
Few big ships and a lot of small intercoastal traders. Looks like you got your share, too.
That big white one up against Mud Island is Moyo's yacht. Hey! Your girl all right?
Duvalier had sagged against the side of the Hummer.
You okay, Red?
Just a little faint.
Let me take the packs.
Thanks.
Mind if I check your pulse?
Valentine lifted Duvalier's wrist and watched her hand. Still steady? No. Was that a tremble? She was bitten 4 days ago. She should be in the clear. Valentine threw the satchel of traveling supplies, the pseudo-spam, chocolate bars, and a few detonators surrounded by fresh underwear and toiletries, over his shoulder, along with the bigger duffel carrying their guns. She used her stick to walk down to the bridge.
I think I got a little fever.
Cotswold walked ahead, almost filling the sidewalk-sized bridge. Cotswold explained something to the city guard at the other end as Valentine gave Duvalier a water bottle.
Val, I don't want to be walking around naked in that pen. If I got it...
You got an infection from the bite, I bet. God knows what kind of bacteria they have in their mouths.
Everybody says it mutates sometimes. Maybe it mutated, so it takes 4 or 5 days.
Cotswold waved at them impatiently, and they stepped off the walkway. The city guard smiled and nodded.
Welcome to Memphis. Roll yourself a good time, sir.
Valentine felt around in his pocket for some of the Memphis scrip. Everready sometimes used the lower denomination bills for hygiene purposes. He'd accumulated so much of it over the years, and tipped the city guard. He'd learned in Chicago to tip everyone who so much as wished you a good afternoon. The bill disappeared with a speed that would do credit to a zoo doorman. The Pyramid Island had obviously once been parkland, but a maze of trailer homes had sprung up around it, separated by canvas tents selling food and beverages.
Remember, Cots, I gotta get a peek at Moyo's operation if you want your ring.
Stay away from the common.
Cotswold indicated the trailers and tents with a wave.
You hear stories about men disappearing. Don't know if they're shanghaied or...
He jerked his thick chin upward toward the Curian Tower, a gesture almost imperceptible thanks to his thick flesh.
No society types go there, not if they want to avoid the trip.
Bastard.
Seems a funny attitude for a bodyguard.
Her mother died from complications of syphilis.
Cotswold pointed to the other side of the island, where the houseboats were nosed into the protective dike around the city.
Visitors with gold buy themselves housing.
Not too expensive, please.
I'll arrange something for her budget. Let's go down to the rental agent.
They walked along the flood wall. Like most Curian civic improvements, it was a patched-up conglomeration of sandbags and concrete. The river wall made the dikes of New Orleans look like monuments to engineering. Too bad the river was dropping to its summer low.
Seems quiet.
Valentine was thinking of the towering white propane tank on the river flank of the pyramid. Most of the activity around the colossal structure involved men pushing crates on two-wheelers into the convention center. Valentine wondered at the lack of grogs. In both Chicago and New Orleans, their horse-like strength and highly trainable intelligence were used for loading and unloading jobs everywhere.
Don't you have grogs on your ducks?
Moyo hates them. As to the quiet, everyone's sleeping out the heat.
Duvalier's face ran with sweat, and her hair hugged her head.
Let's make this quick.
They followed a path up the side of the flood wall and went down to the docks. Cotswold spoke to an enormous man sitting beneath a beach umbrella near the entryway to the boats.
He needs to see the color of your coin.
After a little bartering, Valentine had some difficulty with the man's accent. Through Cotswold's offices, they arranged for an old cabin cruiser at the rock-bottom price of $400 a week, in gold. 1 week in advance, and after the first day, the second week had to be paid for, or the rate would go to $550. Valentine nodded at the terms.
We'll be gone before then. Unless Duvalier...
Valentine sacrificed one of Everready's coins and got a pile of devalued Memphis scrip in return.
Let me make sure these are Memphis bills.
Cotswold thumbed through the wad.
Hold it. This 50 is in Atlanta dollars.
Sorry, sir.
Cotswold arranged the money and handed it to Valentine.
There's a couple of little markets inside the pyramid. I wouldn't buy anything from the cots and the commons unless it's fruits or vegetables. They'll sell you dog and tell you it's veal. And don't buy the sausages unless you need stink bait.
Thank you.
I have to attend to a few things in town. I'll be back tonight to show you around.
Maybe not tonight. My security's not well. How about tomorrow night?
Yeah, even better. It'll be the weekend.
Fuck it!
Valentine took her arm. She flinched, but settled down when she saw who he was.
She doesn't like it when I fuss. Come on, Red. Let's get you in the shade.
She still wasn't trembling. Valentine wished he had listened to old Dr. Jalinga from 2nd Regiment talk more about rabies. All he could remember is that when they started to spaz out, the safest thing to do was shoot. He'd agreed not to let her suffer, but now he wondered. Cotswold followed them down to the wharf. Valentine quickened his step, looking at the numbers painted on the cement alongside the moored houseboats.
Our arrangement.
You'll get it. Once you get me a tour of Moyo's setup.
I need a chance to check out that ring before you blow town.
As soon as I'm in the pyramid.
Number 285. This was their boat. It looked like a frog sitting between two giant white tortoises. The two level houseboats on either side of the spade-shaped cruiser looked as though they were using the craft as a fender. It had once been a dual outboard, judging from the fixtures.
It's a cabin.
A man who was mostly beer gut and sunglasses sat under an awning atop the port side craft.
Why, hello, stranger.
Low back.
You'll want to wash your bed now, good. Last time that cabin was used, it was by the president of the Ohio, Nebraska. He kept his bird dogs in there. They scratched a lot.
I'll be back tomorrow.
Stu Jacksonville. Leisure and entertainment. Thanks for the tip.
Forbes Abernathy. I'm a poor, benighted refugee from Dallas. Drifting the world and drowning my sorrows in alcohol and midway pussy. Or that's what the wife said before she took off with a Cincinnati general. Does this boat look adrift to you?
Not in the least.
Valentine threw the satchel down in the stern of his housing and helped Duvalier in.
Now you're putt-putt. A strong storm comes and you'll be blown downriver.
Thanks for the warning.
Valentine tried the key in the padlock, holding the doors to the front half of the cabin cruiser closed. After a little jiggling, it opened. He could smell the dogs, or rather, their urine.
Sorry, Allie.
He went into the cabin. It had two bed couches set at angles that joined at the front, and moldy-smelling carpeting that looked like the perfect place to hatch fleas, and opened a tiny top hatch to air it out. There was a tiny washroom and sink. He tried the tap, and got nothing.
Thanks, Forbes.
Duvalier almost fell into the cabin and plunged face down onto the bench. Valentine knelt beside her and checked her pulse again. It was fast, but strong, still no trembling. Another piece of Dr. Jalinga's lecture rose from the tar pit of Valentine's memory. A few people had proven immune to the various strains of rabies virus, or fought it off with nothing more than a bad fever. He crouched next to her, crouching was all that was possible in the tiny cabin, and touched her back. It was wet through, wet enough to leave his hand slick and damp. She stirred and rolled over.
Got any water?
Her hazel eyes looked as though they were made of glass. Valentine poured her another cup from his canteen. Perhaps a half cup remained. He needed to get them some supplies.
Why are we back, David?
We're not back. We're in Memphis.
That's what I mean. Back in the KZ.
We're trying to
die.
He put his hand on her forehead. It felt hot and pebbly.
We're doing no such thing.
That's why we keep going back in. Every time we get out of the KZ, all we can think about is the next trip in. Now, why is that? We feel guilty. We want to die like them.
Rest. I'm gonna see about food and something to drink.
Valentine unbuckled the shoulder holster. He went up on deck, feeling alone and vulnerable. The orb-like superstructure atop the pyramid seemed designed to stare straight down into the back of his boat. He had such a tiny piece of information measured against the vastness of the structure above him. After a moment's thought, he locked the door to the cabin with the padlock again. Job at hand. Eat the elephant one bite at a time. His neighbor had a comic book perched on his bulging stomach.
Excuse me, Mr. Abernathy, is there a market around?
Inside the pyramid, Plaza North. Jackson, was it?
Jacksonville.
Where are you two from?
The Gulf.
Valentine jumped up onto the wharf.
Excuse me, my friend's feeling a little sick.
You two ever been to Dallas?
Valentine pretended not to hear the question and waved as he walked down the wharf as quickly as he could. The boat attendant saw him coming and suddenly found something to do inside a rusted catamaran. Valentine ignored him and crossed a wide plaza to the pyramid. From close in, the base seemed enormous, flanked by concrete outcroppings with pairs of city guard doing little but being visible. A towering stone pharaoh, leaning slightly to the left, thanks to the earthquake, Valentine imagined, looked out on the main parking lot with its hodgepodge of trailers from the bottom of an entrance ramp. He walked up the ramp and noticed dozens of chaise lounges on the southwest outer concourse. Women and men, mostly in bathing suits or camp shorts, lounged and drank, while waiters in white shirts and shorts dispensed food and drink from a great cart. One deeply tanned man snored into a white naval hat with braiding on its black brim, a thick ring of brass around his white-haired knuckle. Valentine paid them no more attention than he would a group of lakeside turtles. He passed through a set of steel and glass doors and into the pyramid. Moyo kept his realm cleaner than the zoo. Valentine gave him that. The impossibly cool interior smelled of floor polish and washroom disinfectant. He was on some kind of outer concourse, advertisements for alcohol, tobacco, women, games of chance, and sporting events hung on banners tied everywhere. As he walked, tout after tout, mostly teenage boys Hank's age, tried to hand him flyers. Valentine finally took one. Black letters on orange cardstock read, "Bloody Cyborg Action, Pope Fontaine, Hook on Right Hand, versus The Draw, Solid Aluminum Left Arm. Three rounds or maiming, Friday, July 22nd, 9 p.m., Center Ring. All wagers arranged by Roger Smalltree Productions, the Pharaoh of Fair Odds since year 37. Payouts are Moyo bonded and insured. Gallery of Stars, Booth 6.
Hey, listen, sir. My brother's a locker board. He says draws long-shotted to pay off big. Do a bet and you can pay a whole week on the midway, say?
Say.
Valentine moved on. A woman thrust out a mimeograph of a nude woman with snakes held in each outstretched arm.
Angelica the Eel Swallower!
Four-color circus posters, bigger than life, screamed out their attractions as he followed an arrow to Plaza North. He found the food market using his nose. A lively trade from grill and fish vendors added to the aromas of cut melons, fresh berries, and tomatoes. At another stall, fryers bubbled, turning everything from bread paste to sliced potatoes into hot, greasy delight, ready for salting. He placed his hand on a pile of ice at the edge of an ice-filled bin, holding two gigantic Mississippi catfish resting on a semicircular counter, and felt the wonder of the wet cold. The woman behind the bins of freshwater food glared at Valentine.
Mind? Mind? You buy? Shove off!
Valentine settled on buying a 5-gallon plastic jug full of water and some wheat mix for cereals. Then he found a bottle labeled aspirin. It also smelled like it. The druggist turned to Valentine.
You just bought that, son.
He paid, glad that Memphis script was good in here. Valentine sought out some food. The rotisserie chickens were reasonably priced and looked fresh. He had to buy a stick for them to put it on, and he topped his purchases off with a sugar-frosted funnel cake. Mm. He ate half of the last as he wandered, getting a feel for the layout of the pyramid, or midway, as the locals seemed to call it. An area labeled the arena seemed to be the center of activity. He heard a woman's voice warbling through a door as a pair of sandal-wearing rivermen exited. There were also two huge convention center spaces filled with wooden partitions turning the area into a maze of tiny bars, tattoo parlors, and what he imagined were brothels or sex shows. Guards stood in front of the elevators, checking credentials and searching those waiting in line for a lift. Valentine guessed that Moyo's offices were somewhere upstairs. Few visitors seemed to be around at this time of day. Valentine counted at least one employee for every tourist. Red-jacketed security supervisors ordered around men in black overalls with tight-fitting helmets. The foot soldiers bore slung assault rifles and shotguns, but twirled less lethal-looking batons as they walked in pairs around the concourses, grazing from the food vendor stalls or being passed a lit cigarette by a marketer. Beefy old women pushed buckets and wheeled trash bins everywhere, their gray bandanas wet with sweat and pyramid power buttons pinned to their sagging bosoms. Valentine had done enough sightseeing and returned to the line of houseboats. His Dallas neighbor had disappeared. He hurried back to his small rented boat, roasted chicken in one hand, water in the other. He set down the water jug and unlocked the cabin. Duvalier came into the sunshine and reclined on the vinyl cushions, spider-webbed with breaks exposing white stuffing threads, and drank almost her entire oversized canteen of water. Valentine mixed her up some of the cereal, ideal for children and seniors, advanced nutrition, the label read, from the bag, and she ate a few bites with her field spoon.
Oh, God.
She tossed the rest to the Mississippi fishes. She leaned against the side of the boat and closed her eyes. He gave her two tablets of aspirin, and she gulped them down, then gave him her cup to refill.
Chicken?
You can have it. You get anywhere with this Moyo guy?
I haven't met him yet. How you feeling?
Oh, weird dreams, really. Weird dreams. Thought I was running in Kansas with a cop chasing me. He had giant bare feet with eyes in the toes. I know I'm awake now because you don't have flames coming out of your ears.
I'm glad you're sensible. You were barking out profanity an hour ago.
Give me a day or two. I'll be back up to strength. Or I'll be... Well, either way, you'll be on your way.